Welcome to another edition of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is your host, John Jantz, and my guest today is Chris Guillebeau. He is the editor, founder, author of The Art of Nonconformity, and we're going to talk about his newest book today called The $100 Startup. Reinvent the way you make a living, do what you love, and create a new future. So, Chris, thanks for joining me.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me back, man.
So one of the things that my listeners may not know about you is that you have set a goal to visit every country in the world by about this time next year, I think, is your deadline. And what do you have, 10 to go?
That is correct. Next year, and I actually have 8 to go now.
8 to go, wow.
8 countries left out of 193. So I'm in the final stretch.
Now, are a couple of those you're going to have to go with, like, diplomats and touch your toe on the border and run?
You know, I've been, it's funny, I've been doing this a long time. There's not many countries that are truly unsafe like that. I mean, there are a couple of them. When I went to Somalia recently, that was a little bit touch and go. But most places are totally fine and totally welcoming and hospitable. So in some cases, it's more of a question of how to get the right visa to go there. Or how to coordinate the flights to go there, because there's normally only one or two flights a week, you know, to certain islands or certain African countries. But, you know, so far so good. It's been an incredible journey and by far, you know, much more positive experience than negative.
Yeah. Well, by this point, I'm certain you know what to wear, too, and that helps.
I pretty much wear the same clothes everywhere I go, you know, regardless of season. So that may be smart or may not be, but for me, it's just easy.
Well, now, this Christmas, I get to take my kind of, I must admit, I'm not a world traveler. I've gotten to go speak in a couple other countries, which has been really cool, but my wife and I are going to go to the Galapagos Islands, so I don't think it gets much more exotic than that, at least not for me.
No, that's great. I actually haven't been to Galapagos. I've been to Ecuador, but not to those islands.
So yeah, and that's a part of, that's owned by Ecuador, or that's considered part of the
Correct.
Country of Ecuador, right? Yeah.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. So, in your new book, The $100 Startup, if we should probably talk about the reason we came here, right?
Sure.
You, one of the things I think is interesting, particularly as a fellow author, is that you really did some deep research on this. I'm reading from your site, and you identified or had help identifying 1,500 individuals who had built a business earning $50,000 or more from a modest investment in, as the book suggests, $100 or less. So what was that process like?
It was a pretty comprehensive process, and the whole goal is to create something that's data-driven because, you know, as you're familiar, like there's a lot of, you know, business books that come out that are somewhat general, and it's not to say that they're not helpful, but I wanted to, you know, provide a message that went a little bit beyond just, you know, go for it, you know, start something. And so this book is more like, okay, if you're ready to go for it, then here's what you do. You know, here's the next steps, and here are all these checklists and data, and it's all based off of the, you know, the stories of people who've done it before. So we began by casting the nets, you know, pretty widely, just going out and saying we're interested in talking with people who are unconventional entrepreneurs, maybe unexpected entrepreneurs, people who started a business perhaps after getting laid off or fired from a job, or people who are just, you know, trying to make their way, you know, newly employed or new to the job market, as well as people who had retired. They were just looking like for a very broad range of people, and they had to all be willing to share details about their finances. They had to talk about how much money they make, how much it costs to start the business, you know, as well as all the successes and failures along the way. So I really wanted to get something really comprehensive. So we started with the 1,500 and then just kind of kept narrowing down until we came to about 70 stories that comprise, you know, the majority of the book. And so the whole goal of the book is to share those stories, again, as specific as possible, and in a way that creates a blueprint that other people can follow.
Well, and in your sort of decision of your final cut, I mean, were you looking for certain industries, certain approaches? I mean, or not like a specific one, but kind of representative of, you know, so many service, so many product,
sure.
That kind of stuff?
Sure. You know, so on this part, there was some specificity to it, and then I also have some admitted bias to it as well. So the specificity, you know, I definitely wanted to make sure that there were, you know, businesses that started without spending a lot of money, without much capital investment at all. I wanted them to make, as you said, at least $50,000 a year, and a lot of them make a lot more than that, but I just chose $50,000 as the average U.S. income. I wanted to feature businesses that required no special skills. to start, because one of the main objections to starting a business is, well, I don't know what to do, or I don't have a business degree or something like that. So I tried to find things, that anyone could do, or at least, based on skills that someone already had, those kind of things. And then that brings me down to like 200 to 300. And then I just admittedly start looking for stories that I find, inspirational or interesting, or stories that I feel like, there's something that, something there that could be applied in a broader case. And so from there, I'm interested in diversity. I'm interested in geographic diversity. We have lots of stories from around the world in different parts of the U.S., people from all walks of life, different ages, men and women, people who had families that they were, responsible for, as well as single people. So just trying to create a whole broad range of stories.
So I read somewhere, and I don't think it was on your site, but it may have been, a comparison of kind of what you're talking about, this anybody can do it, reinvent the way you make a living. Little bit of a comparison to the 4-Hour Workweek and Tim Ferriss's success. How would you say, you can flat out say that's BS, or you could say, well, no, here's how our approach is different. I was curious what your take on that is.
Sure. I don't know if I have so much of a take. I guess I'm kind of interested in this book, Standing on Its Own. And of course, Tim has been very successful. He's sold a lot of books and he's helped a lot of people, and that's great. Hopefully this book will do the same, maybe in a different way. I guess, we each write from our, like all of us, not just Tim and me, but you and everybody else, we all share from our own experiences. And part of my experience comes from the travel background of, going to every country. It comes from spending a few years in West Africa as a volunteer. Like, I learned a lot through that process. And then in talking with all of these unconventional entrepreneurs all over the world. So there's certainly, lots of things to be learned from Tim's books or from other books, but hopefully, from the $100 Startup as well.
Well, I mean, would you go as far as to say kind of this is, I mean, I get this from the book, that it's almost like your sort of personal mission to say, hey, look, anybody can do this?
I think so, yeah. I think anyone who wants to do this, and not everyone wants to have a business, not everyone wants to do that, but presumably most of your listeners do, or they wouldn't have downloaded the podcast. I think a lot of people want to do something, want to create more freedom for themselves, right? Whether they want to actually be completely self-employed or not, I think almost everyone wants more freedom for themselves in some way or fashion, but not everyone knows, how to go about achieving that, or what the next steps are. And so, again, it's my goal to maybe make that a little bit more specific and say, okay, here's what you can do.
So I'm going to pull a couple of the concepts that really struck me, either because I hadn't thought of them or because I totally agree with them already, and kind of throw those out. And then, feel free to mix in any of the case studies that are so, central to this book and any of these ideas, or we can even finish up with me kind of throwing the, okay, tell me about your three favorites or something. But there's one that I love, and you, I think my notes say here, the magic formula, which is passion plus usefulness equals success. And I really love that one, because I run into all kinds of people, and I'm sure you have too, that, they're brimming with passion.
Right.
But, it's not anything somebody wants to pay for necessarily.
Exactly.
And I think so talk to me about kind of how that fits into this.
Right. Exactly. So that's like the situation you just described is problematic. The other situation that's problematic is to say, well, you shouldn't follow your passion at all. Because, what you do, what I do, what a lot of people in the book, what they do, they are doing something they're very excited about and passionate about. The difference is they found a way to connect that to something that's valuable and desirable in the marketplace, something that really makes a difference in someone's life. That's what value is. We always use this phrase like value, add value, but, what does value really mean? I mean, I think value means helping people. So, essentially the concept that I talk about there, passion plus skill or usefulness, equals success. It's that concept of merging your passion or your skill with something that makes a difference in the world. So the example that I use is, I say like, I can be really passionate about eating pizza, and I used to be really passionate about playing video games, but no one was ever going to pay me to do that. Right. Fortunately, there's lots of other things I'm passionate about that I, was able to connect to something that's valuable. So it's like this, teachable and valuable curve. It's this convergence between what you love, what other people value. I mean, one way or another, I think every successful entrepreneur finds that convergence. So the sooner you can work toward that, in my opinion, the better.
Yeah, and I think I'd say this all the time. I mean, owning a small business, building, going from $100 investment to even – the modest end of $50,000 is a lot of work. So if it's not something that you on your really worst day go, well, at least I enjoy, you know, at least I enjoy the vision for what I'm doing.
Hopefully you enjoy. Hopefully you had a good day. Hopefully maybe you helped someone a little bit. Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, that's my definition of a good day. It's like, did I help someone in a small way? Did I actually make something or create something as opposed to just respond to something? If I can do those two things every day, then I'm good.
You spend a fair amount of time, and I believe this fully, that the companies that really succeed understand what they, and I'll put air quotes around, what they really sell or what the customer really buys. And it's not, you know, they don't probably, some cases they don't start a business thinking that, but they ultimately come to that, hey, what the reason people really connect with us is this difference or what they get out of this. And so talk about maybe some of the companies that you think really, I don't know, we have all kinds of management or consultant lingo like value propositions, but you know, what is it that really that some of those stories in here of companies that really connect with what people want?
I think ultimately what people want is they want to be happy in different ways. They want something added to their life that's positive, or they want something reduced from their life that's negative. So they want less stress, they want less debt, less hassle, and they want more happiness, more free time, more money, all those kind of things. And so, you know, most of the successful businesses, at least the ones that I talk to, they found a way to really focus on happiness. They may not use that word like we're in the business of happiness, but ultimately that's what they're doing. And so I always ask people, you know, what does your business do? Like, how does your business help people? And I ask these very broad questions, and I'm curious to see the responses. And some people will just give very descriptive responses, which is fine, but then other people really understand like the core need that their business meets. And so I talked with Barbara and John in California, and they own this ranch. It's a working ranch. It's called the B6 Ranch. But people can go and stay there and kind of have a holiday, but they also can go and ride. They can do cowboy stuff. You know, they can sit around the fire, all of this. And so when I asked her, like, you know, what's your business all about, she didn't say anything about what they actually do. She said, well, the point of our business is, you know, if you come and stay with us, you can be someone else for a day. You know, and our message is come stay with us and you'll be a cowboy. And I thought, well, that's really powerful. That's a very, like, powerful way to describe your business as opposed to saying, like, you know, come and spend $500 a night and ride a horse around, you know? I mean, that's what they're really doing. But it's this whole, like, appeal to aspiration. It's appeal to, like, maybe not too much escapism, but, like, you have this busy life. Come and do something fun. This will make you happy. This will help you relax. And in many different ways, like, you know, all the businesses that I talk to and probably many of the ones that you work with, they do that, you know, on their own as well.
Yeah, and what I think is so powerful about that, too, is that a lot of times the person who wants that doesn't even know they want. And so by you sort of articulating that, you know, it's like, oh, wow. You know, that's what I want. I don't want a horse, or I don't want to buy insurance. Right. That's always my favorite. I don't want to buy insurance. I mean, that's a piece of paper that does nothing for me.
Right.
But what I'm getting.
But that insurance creates the security, you know?
Right,
I mean, you know,
right.
Insurance relates to your family. Like, I mean, there's so many things there. So the deeper you can get, you know, the better. I mean, another story, Jaden Hare, she has this website called steamykitchen.com, which is fabulously popular, and she does cookbooks, and she's on TV. And so, you know, in my opinion, what she's selling is not recipes, and I can go to her site and get recipes, and there's pictures of food and all that, but there's a much deeper connection. It's like, you know, she's selling the dream of more time with your family, you know, wholesome, good meals with your family. Your kids are going to love the food, and, like, the family's going to get closer together, you know, by sitting around the table. So, you know, the more you can get close to those real emotional needs that all of us have, then the easier it is to be successful, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one of my favorite chapters, and because someday I'm going to go get a cabin in the woods somewhere and continue to write books, is this idea of, you know, location has certainly changed, hasn't it?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, location is overrated. Location is overrated.
So talk about some of the businesses that are doing some things that really have been literally enabled by the fact that we can now work virtually.
Yeah, I talked to this guy who's originally from Croatia, and he actually emailed me, and we did like a Skype thing from Thailand, and he had kind of taken off to do this. And he created a consultancy working mostly with companies in North America, I believe, doing like spreadsheet work and database work, you know, all these kind of things that sound somewhat boring, but again, they're real needs. And you know, just to kind of relate to the previous thing we were talking about, when I first hear spreadsheets, I'm like, oh, that bores me to tears. But the way he has kind of, you know, pitched his business was, you know, he's basically helping his customers look good at work. You know, if people have to do all these different spreadsheet things, he helps them manage them and creates all these macros and basically makes their work, you know, easier and makes them look better. And so he had been able to take this, you know, consultancy to Thailand. He talked about, I forgot the amount. I think it was something like $1,000 or something. He said one day he did this job and he got paid $1,000 for it. And he talked about how in Croatia, like that was like a pretty good monthly income, you know, but that here was, you know, something that he received for one day. So that was one story. There's another guy named Brandon Pierce who was from Utah, and he had a family and was working as an engineer. But he started this business called musicteachershelper.com. I think that's it. If it's not that, it's something similar. But he started a business basically, you know, helping music teachers with their scheduling and their billing, all these things that most music teachers are either not very good at or just don't want to deal with. And that he set that up under a continuity model, a very smart pricing structure. And the last I heard, that business was $300,000 to $400,000 a year. So he had moved his family first to Central America. They were in Guatemala, I think, for a year or two, and then now I think they're in Asia. So they're just kind of traveling the world. He's operating this business remotely. And there's so many stories, you know, like that, so many stories of possibility when you set up the business in the right way.
Yeah, that's very cool. You have a couple, again, I think this might be a chapter or a whole section, but where you talk about people that have done kind of spectacular launches, or you actually give some advice about this idea of launching your business, not necessarily a product or service. You want to talk about some of the key points there?
Yeah, probably the main number one key point, you know, for launching anything, you know, whether it's any kind of product, service, book, whatever, is to create a story and to make it an event. And, you know, you should never just pop up one day and say, hey, I'm launching something. You know, here it is. I mean, you can do that, but your results will be much greater if you involve people from the beginning and, you know, tell them what it's about and tell them what's coming and give them these teasers along the way. And so the original model for that doesn't come from the Internet at all. It comes from Hollywood. It comes from, Hollywood's producing these multi-million-dollar movies where so much investment has gone into it, and they want to make sure that movie is going to be successful. So they spend, you know, a year in advance often. You know, the first trailer for the movie comes out a year in advance, or at least a season in advance, and then you might see another trailer, and then there's all this hype and the lead-up, and their whole goal is, by the time that movie comes out, they're not relying on word of mouth at all. By the time the movie comes out, they want everybody, you know, planning on seeing that movie. And so, you know, most of our launches are not nearly that sophisticated, but the point is if you can create a story and create an event, then your results will be much greater. And I told a number of stories in the book. The short version of one of them is I created a product called the Empire Building Kit, and I wasn't really sure how to do the launch. I felt like I had a good product, but I really didn't have a good strategy for the launch. And then long story short, I ended up taking the Empire Builder Amtrak train from Chicago to Portland with my good friend J.D. Roth, who writes the blog Get Rich Slowly. And he and I rode the Empire Builder train, and we did the launch, like, live from the train, you know, for 24 hours only, and created this whole story around it. We took a video, lots of photos. And my favorite part of it was, well, first of all, the launch did very well. We did $100,000 in one day and then repeated it a month later. But my favorite part of the story was I got all these emails from people who said, you know, I don't even want to buy this product, but I'm enjoying, like, the story. And I'm enjoying, like, how things are going. And I've told my friends about this, and I think, you know, you're trying to do something bigger with that. And that was indeed my goal. So you don't necessarily have to ride an Amtrak train across the country for 44 hours, but however you can create a story and make it something bigger, then so much the better.
Yeah, I attended a restaurant opening last night, in fact. And the woman who started this business, it's a raw food restaurant, and she mm-hmm. has spent about a year basically raising the money for it. It was a lot of what she was trying to do. So this is not a $100 launch store, but she has been speaking and giving, you know, workshops and lectures, so all free, you know, all just to build community for about a year while it took her to get this restaurant going. And basically sent out an email yesterday, and the place was, there was a line around the block to get into this thing last night. And I thought, now that, you know, build a community and then launch a business.
Great.
And again, I mean, she's put her heart and soul into it for the last year, but still, it was really kind of exciting to see from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. And think about all the restaurants that open and no one's there, you know, or they're actually like struggling to get people to come in. I mean, like that's so much a better story.
Yeah, it was very cool. So finish this sentence for me, Chris. Advertising is like sex.
Only the losers pay for it.
So I can't. Is that an original, or is that from something?
I thought I heard that before. I wish I could take credit for it. It actually came from a Fast Company magazine article a couple years ago, and I think it was actually something about in the future. You know, advertising will be like sex. Only the losers pay for it. But the point is, you know, a lot of what we think about advertising has changed. And you know, a lot. I don't actually pay for much advertising in my business. I don't know if you do. And for some people, it can be a good investment. It's fine. But I think the point is, the greatest marketing that can be done, you know, these days is free. And the greatest marketing, you know, comes from word of mouth, which you've written an entire, you know, systematic book about. So I guess the whole point is, you know, when you're considering like how to bring customers to your business, I mean, you can think about advertising, but maybe also think about all these other ways.
Absolutely. So last point I want to finish up with is this. I love this concept, and that is franchise yourself. So the idea of you get something kind of going successfully, how do you multiply it? And I wonder, besides just the concept, were there some folks that you interviewed that really have kind of successfully scaled?
Yeah, the one that I like, one story from that chapter is Natalie Lussier, who's from Quebec, and she was actually in the raw foods industry, which you mentioned a minute ago. She actually created this whole raw food teaching business, and you know, she had a personal story of how her life was changed, and she lost a lot of weight and got much, much more healthy again by following this diet. But she created this whole consultancy thing, and she had products and services, and she did it very well. But then after she'd done it for like a year, she was thinking like, what else can I do with this? Like, I feel like I've already like explored this whole, you know, niche entirely. And she was also a self-described geek, and she like built everything herself. She did all the database work for her project, and she felt like nobody noticed that because, you know, they were just interested in the product, which is fine. But so basically what she did was she found a way to kind of keep that thing going on autopilot. She did lots of autoresponders, you know, lots of different systems that didn't require her to be there. So that business continues to operate at least a $50,000 a year range. And then she started another consultancy where now she's actually doing tech consulting, doing the gig stuff, the database stuff. And so she basically has these two, kind of these two lives and two, you know, sources of income and two businesses that are somewhat related, but a lot of people find her through one or the other and not realize, you know, that she's doing the other thing. And it's not so much like she's doing twice the amount of work. The whole point is she's franchised herself, you know, to where she's done this. This project is there and it's existing and it's bringing in money, but she's focusing now on the consulting that she, you know, wanted to do for a while.
Yeah, beautiful thing, that residual income.
Right,
as you know. So yep. Chris, we have exhausted our time. I know you're getting ready to go on the road, and people can find at chrisguillebeau.com. But I think you have a $100 startup site also, don't you, where you've got full schedule?
Yeah. Since nobody can spell chrisguillebeau.com,
they
can also go to 100startup.com, and they can see the tour dates and all that stuff.
Well, and I must admit, I have not been able to attend one myself, but I know from looking at the videos that your tour dates or your tour stops are a lot of fun as well.
Well, that's what we try to go for. I don't want it to be boring, you know.
Well, this is I think what you've done is really a great thing, because I think there's so many people that have, you know, are either afraid to start something or feel like they, you know, their only model is the, you know, the big sort of office launch startup. And I think that the roadmap and the inspirational stories certainly should launch a few businesses by themselves.
Well, that's my greatest hope. And thanks for having me on the program. I always appreciate being here.
You bet. We'll see you out there on the road, Chris.
Okay, take care. Bye.